Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Exploring our oneness with Spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today, I welcome ordained Unity minister and author, Laurie Boyd, to the show. Laurie has served congregations in Bloomington, Indiana, and Columbia, Missouri. She, or Missouri, as they like to say, she has served as president of the Great Lakes region of Unity and has extensive training in spiritual counseling and conflict resolution. Yeah. Much of it's shows through in her book, which is a wonderful book, actually. It's called Dark Matters, and it's an exploration of the both-and nature of reality, where dark and light nest in each other. As the subtitle says, it's about discovering wholeness in the shadows, which is a wonderfully important discovery, I think, an important topic, especially in light of some of our Unity teachings. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. So it's a joy to welcome Reverend Laurie Boyd to today's show. Welcome, Laurie.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be talking with you.
I'm glad you're with us. And like I said, I thoroughly enjoyed the book. And by the way, folks, it's a book of exploration, a workbook, because there's so many meditations and guided visualizations and other techniques that you can use in here that'll help you put feet on the ideas that are being talked about. So it's not just about philosophizing, it's about practice. And I think this is what makes the book very fascinating. And it draws from many different ideas of things Laurie's interested in, whether it be unity or spiral dynamics, some of the more depth psychology teachings that we're taking on board now more and more, I think, in New Thought. But it also has her own personal insights. And, you know, in our endless focus on the light, you know, we denied the dark, haven't we? Dark is seen as evil. It's the realm of the devil. This is played out in religion. It's played out in Hollywood. It's played out in our general view of things. And even in Unity and New Thought, we don't want to be negative, you know, and that's the worst thing we could do. So we don't want to be focusing on the darkness or things not working out or things that are less than the light and joy. So we always have to stay positive and optimistic. And, of course, this is a little bit of metaphysical malpractice. And it does us all a disservice, doesn't it? Because when I think of most spiritual traditions, they embrace the dark. You know, the Tao certainly does with the yin and yang. The Hindus and Buddhists have their peaceful and wrathful deities and the balance of Shiva and Shakti and Purusha and Prakriti, you know, the different aspects coming together as one. And I think Jesus understood this. Certainly Jung did, didn't he? We talk about the shadow. He was the one that really emphasized that. All leading to wholeness, right? So, all right, that's a big preamble. Let's jump in. What impelled you into this area of understanding?
My own personal history is what really brought me into it. I have had the joy and frustration and everything else you can imagine of having a lifelong experience with depression. And for a long, long time, I had no understanding of what it was, and just really floundered. I know the spiritual teachings that I grew up with. I did not grow up in Unity. I grew up in a more traditional Christian denomination, although actually several, because I was an Army brat, so I got quite a variety. But that traditional posturing, I guess, basically started from the assumption you're broken. And dealing with lifelong depression, I already knew I was broken. I didn't need to be told that by my spiritual life. I needed to be told the opposite. I needed to have hope. I needed to have a sense of empowerment. I needed to have a sense that what I was experiencing did not have to define who I was. And so I started on a journey of healing, and through that journey, I happened to discover Unity. I was a ways into that journey by the time I discovered Unity, but when I found Unity, it's so funny to me that people talk about, you know, Unity is so unwilling to see the negative or dwell on the dark side or anything, because my experience of Unity was the tool of choice for me on how to deal with all this dark matter within myself. And so I never got that Unity was only about the positive, although I certainly see that now that I've studied more deeply. I see that that people have experienced it that way, but for me it wasn't that experience at all. For me, what I learned in Unity was this idea that that our essence is of God, therefore we are inherently good. That is something that I just clung to, and it was a truth that somehow I knew deep within myself but could not articulate. And so it was that truth that allowed me to hold on through all these experiences of depression and these cycles of depression that I went into. I just knew that there was something more, that there was something deeper, and I knew I was going to keep looking until I either couldn't anymore or until I found it. And so for me, Unity was a really important step on finding it. So part of stepping into that was getting this message. I still remember my first Unity minister was Mary Omwake, Reverend Mary Omwake of Unity of Overland Park at the time. And I remember her standing up there and looking at us and saying, "You are whole, perfect, and complete." And that was the first time that thought had ever entered my head, that I am whole, perfect, and complete. And that doesn't say that the experience that I've had didn't happen. It says all of that happened and still you are whole, perfect, and complete. And so from there, that helped me begin to sit with my experience of reality, to be with that experience, to have the courage to say, you know, today I'm experiencing a deep depression. Today there are voices in my head telling me that I'm worthless. And this is what is, and there is more than that.
Yes. Yeah, beautiful. You know, I think many of us approach Unity, and I'm sure this is true of other denominations and paths too, and we think, oh my goodness, I found something that, you know, I feel I've come home. You know, I've come home to decide that I am worthy. I am a beautiful child of God. And that's wonderful. But then I think we, instead of, you know, letting that then reflect upon the darkness within us. We kind of deny it, if you like. We had a guest speaker in church, Maggie Whitehouse, this last week, and she said, you know, that she was disgusted by conventional Christianity and wouldn't even talk about Jesus for many years. But instead went to the New Age where, you know, all was light and wonder and joy. But she felt she had this nice pink little blanket with tea lights on it in the corner of her room, you know, a little altar space. But underneath it was this festering darkness and resentment that she'd never fully integrated. And I think this is the important thing, isn't it? We discover we are whole and perfect beings of light and love, etc. But then armed with that, if you like, with that capability, we go back in and look at all parts of ourselves and see that, these even the most horrible, depressed, depraved parts of ourselves, you know, are still part of our humanness, part of that which is loved by the one, by the whole. And I think that's, to me, is the work, isn't it? And that's what you emphasize in the book, I think, is the courage to look, you know, at all aspects of who we are.
Exactly. The courage to be present, to know that that no matter how you try to repress something or hide from something, it's always part of your wholeness. And if you can just grab your courage in both hands and sit with it, and say this is what is, then the just the very act of doing that much drops the intensity level enormously. It allows you to I call it radical self-acceptance. You know, I accept myself, I accept who I am, I accept everything about myself. Doesn't mean there aren't areas where I would like to grow, but it means this is who I am, and this is fine. This is my starting point, and I wouldn't change anything on my journey because it's all brought me right here, and it's prepared me to take my next step.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, unfortunately, we demonize so many aspects of the dark, don't we? And I feel like Christianity, conventional Christianity, has thrown out so much that's rich because we've called it the work of the devil. And then you only get to work with half of your being, you know. Instead of saying, "Well, yeah, that devilish part, you know, those aspects of me are equally valid in this journey to wholeness." And if I demonize them and throw them out and I can't look at them, you know, I'm a one-sided person, and I can't truly be effective in my life.
Yeah, it sets us up for this continual inner battle. And we become at war with ourselves. And the journey to wholeness for me is a lot about just stopping the war. You know, it's stopping that inner battle and saying it's all part of the greater wholeness. And what I'm seeking is not light. What I'm seeking is wholeness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember way back in the beginning of my spiritual path. And we're talking 30, 40 years ago, and I go to these retreats and everything, and they do these lovely, you know, fields of light meditations and take you to the top of the mountain, and there was all these flowers and meadows and this, that, and the other. And I wanted to throw up after a while, you know, because it was like, it was unreal. I didn't want to just be in that beautiful place. It was incomplete, yeah. I wanted to feel the grimy, you know, walls of you know, the factories, etc., which were equally a part of my childhood experience. You know, when I found wonder and joy in the dirty canal banks as well as in the beautiful meadows. So, yeah, I remember feeling like it was nice, but I want more. I want to be a wholehearted person and not just zone out, bliss out into this, you know, flower power kind of thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what do you think about the temptation of Jesus? Because there he does the work with the dark side, doesn't he? With the adverse ego, the adversary, whatever you want to call the devil, which is a expression of his own humanness, I guess. He's faithfully attentive to that part of himself, isn't he? He listens to everything that the ego can offer. And then at the end, when he understands what the true nature of the ego is, of the devil, he's able to say, get behind me, Satan. You know, so the shadow is always there, but now it's no longer in front of him, you know, clouding his eyes. Now he's looking towards the sun, the possibility, and trailing the shadow. So the shadow hasn't disappeared. It's just in its rightful place. It no longer oppresses us and overwhelms us, but it's still part of the richness, the juice of who we are, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, in one of the chapters in the book, I talk about common Christian themes. The chapter, I titled it, The Devil Made Me Do It.
Right.
And I talk about that, the idea that the figures that we name the devil and Jesus are really, to a large extent, projections of our own shadow and our own light. And we're equally afraid of either one. And we want to say I could never, you know, do anything bad, and so we push that off onto this other figure, this devil figure who is forcing us to do this or tempting us to do this, and
mm-hmm.
instead of just looking at it and saying, you know, I'm a human being and I struggle, and sometimes I am more skillful than others. And instead of looking at it dispassionately, we look at it with such shame that we have to push that off. But we also then look at our light side and say, you know, that's too much responsibility. That's too scary. I don't think I could ever live up to that. And so we push that off into not the real person of Jesus, but this mythic figure that we have created out of Jesus. And he becomes the all-perfect one that we could never live up to, instead of looking at ourselves and accepting that, you know, there are moments when I am brilliant, and there are moments when I am so creative, and there are moments when I am expressing such compassion. And those are my Jesus moments, and I have that in me as well. And the fact that I have both of those in me adds up to the wholeness of who I am, and neither one says I have to be that all the time.
I mean, we have such a hard time, don't we, allowing the humanness of Jesus, you know, allowing him to be a real whole person. I know even in Unity, on our threads sometimes, in our discussion groups, you know, the old chestnut comes up, did Jesus get angry, you know, in the temple? And, oh, yes, he did. He overthrew the tables, and he was, and how could that happen to Jesus, you know? Well, why not? You know, he's a fully human being, isn't he, as much as anything else? And he wept, and he laughed, and he cried, and he mm-hmm. got angry, you know, he got frustrated. I think somebody told me last week the Greek for, in one passage of the Bible where somebody asked Jesus, can you heal me? It says Jesus responded, yes, I can, with compassion. But the word with compassion is incorrect. It should be with irritation. Yes, I can, said Jesus, with irritation. and, you know, yeah, I can. That's what I do. You know, stop bugging me about it. Just get on with it. Let's do it. But it makes you, you know, realize Jesus was a full-on person. Yeah, it never bothered me that he kicked the tables over in the temple, you know, because, of course, he was highly indignant at what they were doing, you know. So why would he? I hate this milk toast Jesus we've always got to have. He was a fully rounded human being. But that brings him closer to us, doesn't it, rather than this, like you say, this idealized mythic figure that, yeah, that's really shunts him off into a cabinet, you know, where he's not helpful to us anymore, really.
Right, but it not only brings Jesus closer to us, but it also calls forth from us a sense of responsibility of this is in you too,
yes.
And to live up to that. To not expect that you will be that in every moment, but to say this is in me, and when I'm having moments where I'm angry and upset and frustrated and behaving with I call it behaving with less skill, I get to think about that, and I get to think, you know, could I could I be living closer to that example?
Yes.
I think of Jesus as the great example instead of the great exception. Then it empowers me to ask the question, could
absolutely.
I be closer to that example?
Yes, that's beautiful. And I think it was Eric Butterworth, wasn't it, that came up with that, and he wasn't the great exception, he was the great example, and that it shifts it, doesn't it, so well. And I love the idea of skillful means of doing something skillfully, because it defangs it. It takes it away from a moralistic judgment to just something we're working with. You know, was I acting and responding skillfully in that moment or not? Folks, I'm with Laurie Boyd. I think you can already just understand how fascinating this book is. I would recommend you get hold of it. I'm sure it's available in all the usual outlets, but it's called Dark Matters, Discovering Wholeness in the Shadows. There's a pivotal moment in Laurie's story that she shares about an experience in the labyrinth at Unity Village. And when we come back after the break, we'll talk about that, because it informs the book very much, I think. Join me again, join Laurie and me again, after these messages from Unity.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
Have you asked your soul what it wants? Or are you so busy meeting the needs of everyone else? Family, friends, children, bosses, that you haven't checked in with the part of you that matters most? Janet Connor asked this question and received an answer. Your soul wants five things. That's it. Five things. Your soul wants to connect with Source, commit to values, serve a purpose, express itself creatively, and last, it longs to create a beautiful, abundant life. Janet Connor teaches five wisdom habits that meet those needs. You can take each course separately or register for the complete Your Soul Wants Five Things series and receive $1,000 in bonuses for free. Visit JanetConnor.com and explore all five courses in her signature series, Your Soul Wants Five Things. Your soul will thank you.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Laurie Boyd. We're talking about her book, Doc Mattis. He's a Unity minister and also a practitioner of various spiritual paths and modalities, including spiral dynamics and other things. And there's some of that informs the book. But there's one moment, really, that was very moving, and the description of your walk in the labyrinth at Unity Village, Laurie. And I know it's a long story, so you might want to just give us a thumbnail version. But
okay.
It was a big shift, wasn't there, for you there?
It was huge. It was huge. I was at Unity Village, and I was there for a week of SEE classes. And I had sort of taken as my own personal theme for the week that I was seeking wholeness. I was far enough along in my spiritual journey that I knew that that I needed to somehow make sense of this mix of light and dark within myself. And so I had, you know, was there taking several classes. I had a wonderful guided meditation early in the week with Robert Brummett that started sort of the whole ball rolling. And toward the end of the week, we were assigned for one of my classes to walk the labyrinth. And so I decided to just set an intention as I walked this labyrinth, to set the intention for wholeness without trying to make it any more detailed than that. And so, you know, it was this hot July afternoon. It was probably the typical Kansas weather of 103 in the shade, and there was no shade. And I was walking this inward journey on the labyrinth, and I was having one of those mountaintop experiences like you described a little bit earlier, but very deeply real. I mean, I was just, with every step I took, I was more connected and more expansive. I was expanding out until I felt like I was one with the entire universe. And I had this incredible experience on the inward journey. And then, you know, as with the labyrinth walk, you walk inward, you pause for a little bit of reflection, and then you turn and you walk the reverse journey outward. And what happened is I walked the journey outward, I started hearing this sort of voice in the back of my head say, you know, do you doubt? Was that a real experience? Do you doubt? And I kept trying to make the right answer come. Of course I don't doubt. You know, that was an incredible experience. I was blown away. How could I possibly have any doubts left after that experience? But I knew in my heart that was a lie. I still doubted. And the question just kept coming up. Do you doubt? Do you doubt? Do you doubt? I kept walking. I kept getting angrier. I was arguing with myself, trying to get the right answer to come. I walked all the way out of the labyrinth. So you know how long that takes. That's a big labyrinth. Still arguing with myself. And I finally got to the outside, stopped about 3 feet out of the exit, arguing with myself, you know, do you doubt? No. Do you? And finally, this other little voice of myself piped up and said, yes. Yes, I doubt. And just instantly, I heard, then turn around and go back in the labyrinth. And I have to say, my first thought in that moment was, but everyone will think I'm stupid because there's a whole bunch of other people out there walking it too, you know. And then it was like, do you doubt? Well, yeah. Well, then. And so I argued with myself, and I finally decided to go back in. I finally turned around to walk back into the labyrinth. And I was so angry at myself. I was raging at myself. You know, how could I possibly still, after such an incredible high experience, after years at this point of work, how could I still be in this place of not believing in all of this? And I started just sort of reciting to myself, this is the me that doubts. And what I meant was, this me is a piece of whatever you want to say. And I was naming everything I hated about myself, everything that had ever come up in a depression, everything that had ever been in any way a negative experience for me, I was naming, this is the me that, you know, I can't do this right, I can't do that right. I was crying, I was angry. I have no idea what the other people were thinking at this point, or if they even noticed me or had any awareness that this was happening within me. But I just, it was like everything dark, everything rejected came spilling out and gushing forth in that moment. And I went on this second inward journey, naming all of these things. And finally, at some point, I had named everything, and I ran out of emotional steam, basically. I just exhausted myself. And I happened to glance up, and I saw the flowers and the trees that are around that area. It's the garden up by the inn, although the inn wasn't there at that time. And I thought, oh, wow. Huh. This me that I hate so much can see that and see that it's beautiful. And I just sort of took that in, and I kept walking. And my eyes went up again, and I saw the birds in the sky, and I thought, this me can see that and know that it's beautiful. And then it hit me. This me that I hate so much can see God and know that it's real. And then the stunning revelation. I remember it to this day. I just stopped dead in my tracks and went, oh my God, this me is God too. This me is God. How is that possible? Wow. And I realized that in all of these years of spiritual practice and growth, that I had been pushing aside that part of myself and trying for the light and trying to live only in the light. And I had never claimed that dark part of myself, if you will. I had never claimed it for God. And so I started walking again. I was still on the inward journey the second time. And I started saying, this me that whatever, that can't believe, this me is God too. This me that has depression is God too. This me that fails when I try things is God too. This me that, you know, and I named everything I had named before. I named it again, but this time I said, this is God too. And when I got to the middle of, to the center of the labyrinth, I stopped right before I stepped into the center and I said, this time I'm taking all of me in.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the light, I'm taking all of me, the dark and the light. And I stepped into the center of that labyrinth, and it was just like, it was an out-of-body experience. I felt this space open up inside of me, and it went all the way up, but it also went all the way down, if up and down can have meaning in those moments. It encompassed everything. And I knew in that moment that I was whole.
What a beautiful description. So many things resonate for me, and I'm sure they resonate for our listeners too in that. It's a very rich story with lots of different threads to it. You know, one thing that really is meaningful to me is in times when I've been struggling or filled with whatever it might be, and I've been ignoring things around me, and then all of a sudden I'll look and see the tree, like you described, or the blue of the sky, or the fact that everything seems to be unfolding in perfect order, regardless of what's happening for me. And I realized, oh my God, you know, all around me is the order and beauty of the universe. And actually, I'm noticing that. So therefore, I'm part of that order and beauty because I'm witnessing it. I'm there with it. And in that moment, I was, you know, I was freed from all my difficulties and traumas. And so that resonated. Also, there's a wonderful statement from Zen Buddhism that says, you know, in order to succeed on the path, you have to have great faith, great doubt, and great persistence. And I've always loved that, you know, because in the traditional, coming back to traditional Christian dualities, you know, you have to have faith all the time, right? And if you doubt, oh my God, you know, you're going to hell, you know, you cannot doubt. And I love the idea that in Zen, it's okay to doubt, it's okay to question, it's okay to feel bereft and hopeless. You know, that's part of the process. And Jesus himself said, you know, blessed are they that mourn, they will be comforted, right? So you understood it's a both-and universe. When you do mourn, there's also this compensatory factor of God's comfort there with you because you're being honest to where you are. And I think this is huge, isn't it? It's being honest about where we are rather than playing games with the universe or with our spirituality. It's being, you know, you're for real rather than being in pretense, whatever.
Exactly. Exactly.
But this inspiration that you came from this, I'm sure has resonated in your life and the ramifications are still unfolding. And I'm sure it makes you a better minister, doesn't it, also?
I think so. I think so. I know that I still am growing from that experience to this very day. Probably my most consistent and consistently fruitful practice is just practicing awareness and acceptance, acknowledging what is, and allowing it to be. Not feeling like I have to run from it, not feeling like I have to change it, but just allowing each experience to be, noticing about myself when I find myself struggling, when I find myself in resistance, and taking that as a signal. One place in the book, one of my favorite metaphors I got from my brother-in-law, who's an avid golfer, I said, you know, when we experience resistance, that's like the little flag that they stick in the hole on the golf course. It's not telling you run away from here. It's telling you here's where the work is. Here's where the work is, and here's where the gold is.
Right.
And so learning to look at resistance, to look at pain, to look at anger and say, this is just information. That's all it is. It's information. If I can step out of the floundering in it and simply allow it to be and allow myself to be with it sort of in more of a witness mode, then I can start to see what is lying underneath of this. And somewhere at the root of all of the resistance that I experience, somewhere at the root of everything, there is always a story. There's always a story that I'm telling myself or that has been taught to me that I have chosen to believe. And that story inevitably turns out not to be true.
And well, it may have been true at one point, but it's certainly not true today.
But
right?
It's not true now. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be a story that actually served my good in the past, but time to let go of it now. And so if I can allow myself to be with what is and to be with the experience that I'm in, I can identify the story and I can start questioning it. Is this story supporting my highest good in this moment? And if not, can I reframe the story or can I just let it go and make up a new story?
And it's part of the release then, you know, in the ability to accept something, we're able to release it. It's kind of counterintuitive in a way, isn't it? You know, in order to release it, you have to accept it. And often we don't want to accept it. We just want to get rid of it. And it's that moment of acceptance that allows us to release. And as you say in the book, you know, then you can transcend, you can move to a higher level. But then there's something after that, which I really like, because often in Unity we have release and then affirmation, but you also add include. So talk about that, release, transcend, include.
So release and transcend, I think we sort of know what those are. Releasing is, you know, is that identifying whatever it is that's no longer serving us and gathering our courage in our hands and saying, what if I let that go? What if I acknowledge that that's no longer serving me and let it go? Transcending then is stepping into what will be my new story once I have let that go. What will be my new story? And I need to create a new story. Life is lived as story, I think. And I need to create a new story. But then include is that extra step, which is to say there are things that we have learned along the way that we don't want to lose, we don't want to let go of. And we don't want to use an old phrase, we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. When we let go of something that no longer serves us, we don't want to let go of everything. We want to just let go of the part that does not serve us. I talked about one of Jesus' parables about the man at the pool in Bethesda and how he had experienced life for many, many years as being dependent on others, and those others would never help him. And through his healing with Jesus, he was able to release this idea of being dependent, and he was able to transcend into this new vision of himself as someone who could stand on his own two feet. And yet, the include stage of that journey will be looking back and saying, I understand that there was an unhealthy dependence, but we are also deeply interconnected in this world. And so rather than that healthy dependence, I want to step into a healthy interdependence. So that's an example of doing this include. He could have moved away from dependence and said, I'm never going to trust anybody again. I'm never going to interact. I'm going to do it everything myself from now on. No, that's not healthy either. That's the pendulum swinging too far. That include brings us back and says there is that within us that is deeply interdependent, and that's healthy, and that's God in action.
There's another part too, isn't there, that's important to me, and that is along the same lines you're talking about. You know, that he was limited to the bed he was on, you know, for 38 years and could never get into the water to get healed. You know, like you say, nobody was there to help him. But Jesus didn't say, throw the bed away. You know, Jesus said, take up your bed and walk. And I love that idea because the walk is the transcending, but you're taking your bed with you. In other words, you're taking who you were, all that part of you with you. You know, it's part of your integration. You couldn't have got to this part of freedom unless you realized, you know, how you were imprisoned. And I think that's a very wise psychology there in that parable, because, you know, take up your bed and walk. You know, you still got the shadow behind you, but it's informing you now. It's included in the wholeness that you are. And as you said in the book, you know, nobody knows what happened later. You know, did he go back to the pool? Did he go back to the bed? Or did he have a totally new life? It's up to us to decide. And I think that's another wonderful aspect of Jesus' parables. You know, doesn't give us pat answers, does he? Doesn't come to a nice little conclusion, you know, a moralistic.
He only gives us questions.
he gives us choices. You know, well, here we go. You know, and how are you going to live from now on? And that's the beauty of all this. I think it's offered. We are going to run out of time, and I want to cover two things. There's a wonderful interpretation that you have of the parable of the woman with the jar. that comes from the Gospel of Thomas, and many people have struggled with that one because it's how can the kingdom of heaven be a jar, a broken jar, where all the grain is running out or whatever, and that doesn't make sense. My idea of the kingdom is fullness; it can't be empty. So you've got an interpretation of that. But before we get to that, I just want to talk about Course in Miracles a little bit, because many people are interested in the Course in Miracles, and there's wonderful things in the Course. But the underlying problem I have with it is, you know, in its absolute nature, it doesn't leave room very much for the relative. You know, the relative is merely an illusion, and it's something to be overcome. In the system we're talking about here, the relative and the absolute nest in each other, right? Obviously, yes. The relative doesn't have ultimate reality. You agree to that. But it does have a relative existence. And so, you know, it's hard to discover the absolute unless you're embodied in what is not seemingly the absolute. So they're both parts of the whole. And I find that's the sort of fatal flaw for me in A Course in Miracles. I don't know if you agree.
You know, I've not been a student of A Course in Miracles, although I have had several ministers myself who were, so I've had a little bit of a training in it. And I came to the same conclusion in that it seemed to me, with what exposure I had, that often it was about trying to escape the relative and live only in the absolute, seeing the relative as illusion. And to me, the relative is an important part of the whole. It is a necessary part of the whole. I use the word God to describe this whole, and God cannot express itself fully only in the absolute. The relative is necessary because there are experiences that can only be had in the relative. The example I use is the example of love. And in the absolute love, in the absolute, there is only love. In the absolute, we are love. But to experience love, we have to have an other, an object of love. And the other only exists in the relative. So that is an experience that can be had in the relative that cannot be had in the absolute. I have to think that there is a reason that infinite oneness manifested itself in this relative universe, in this relative realm of seeming separation. And I can say, yes, it's an illusion, and yes, it's absolutely necessary for full expression of the whole.
Right. There's a beautiful story, isn't there, about God wanting to love and yearning to know himself a little more closely. And as a result of that, you know, desire, the Son was created. And then the Son, looking back at the Father, you know, with equal love, and joy, both of them together laughing with joy, created the Holy Spirit, you know, and then from that Holy Spirit comes forth everything out of that Trinity. And I love that idea, you know, that they are dependent upon each other in some way. They're part of the cosmic dance, right? And we can't have the one without the other. We can't have the dark without the light and vice versa. So, ultimately, it's an integration. It's all one because there is only the oneness. But it's this play of forces that Hinduism actually is so good at describing, I think. But I got to get on to the parable. I'm going to read the parable, and in the last 5 minutes, you can tell me what it means, okay? and enlighten us all because it really is a good interpretation.
All right.
Jesus said, "The kingdom of God is like a woman who was carrying a jar full of meal. While she was walking along a distant road, the handle of the jar broke, and the meal spilled behind her along the road. She didn't know it. She hadn't noticed the problem. When she reached her house, she put the jar down and discovered that it was empty." It's from Gospel of Thomas, 97th verse. All right. How does that make sense?
So the kingdom of God in this situation refers to a state of consciousness in which we live in the both and. We live in both the relative and the absolute awareness. The woman represents us. She is a human being living an ordinary human life. The meal in the jar represents the false beliefs, the stories that we have accumulated as a result of living from the consciousness of the relative self. So the jar represents the limits that we've put on ourselves, the boundaries that we've created, this artificial boundary between our relative and absolute self that we've created in consciousness. So the fact that the woman was walking along a distant road, that's talking about our spiritual journey. When we're walking, we're not just passively making our way through life. Rather, we're actually doing our spiritual work. She's actively engaged in her spiritual growth process. And the handle of the jar breaking represents the initiation, if you will, of a new cycle of growth. It's a moment of release. Every time we release, the jar handle breaks anew at a deeper level. It's not a one-time event. It's a repeated process. The meal spilled out along the road behind her. I think this speaks to the fact that as we do our work, these false stories, these things which no longer serve us, they gradually trickle away. And often we don't realize that it's happening. We just know that we're doing our work and we don't necessarily see real visible progress. So she hadn't noticed a problem, as it were. We're right. Unconscious of the benefits in the moment. We're in the midst of our human stuff and we don't always see the big picture. And yet, as long as we continue to stay engaged in our spiritual practice, the work continues, whether or not we're aware of it. When she reaches her house, that is representing that moment of spiritual breakthrough, that aha moment. It's that time when we become consciously aware of a boundary, of a barrier, and we see the means to break through it. It feels like a sudden discovery, but the truth is it's a process we've been working at all the way along the journey. It's just that in this moment it has burst into our conscious awareness. So then she put the jar down and discovered it was empty. What we find in that aha moment is the empty jar. It represents that space that we create in our consciousness when we have let go of something that no longer serves us. And it is a place of pure potential. And this is that place of possibility. And this is that experience of Kingdom of God consciousness, this idea that we live in this space of pure potential. So I summarized it in the book. I said the consciousness of infinite oneness is like a person who has, through regular spiritual practice, let go of the false beliefs and stories of the relative self, dissolved that boundary between the relative and absolute, and created room for the absolute self to move into expression.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Wonderful.
And, you know, that idea of empty space, we don't see that so much in Christianity, but that shows up everywhere in Eastern philosophy.
Absolutely.
Taoism, Buddhism, they all use that metaphor of the empty space. So I was really thrilled to find that metaphor in Christianity.
Well, and there is, you know, on the mystical path, they call it kenosis, you know, the mm-hmm. self-emptying. So but it's not commonly known. You're right in general Christianity. But I love the idea that, you know, losing it is finding it. You know, when you say I've lost it, yeah, you have lost your container. You know, that which is safe, that which is seemingly the truth, and yet now you're open to something much larger, much more beautiful. That emptiness, right? Shunyata, as they call it in in Buddhism, this sense of going beyond the confines of what we thought was safe for us, was real for us. And mm-hmm. I think it's in those moments of total, I can't work it out. I'm gone beyond what I can do. That we can have the greatest breakthroughs, right? And I think we see it with people with addictions, when they bottom out and realize, I have myself, I can't do anything. I got a release. There's got to be a new way. And it's a wonderful moment, isn't it? Even though it seems to be we've lost everything, in truth, we've gained a whole new world, a whole new understanding. So
exactly.
Thank you for explicating that that parable, because it is really a rich parable, and I've never heard it done so well as the way you have explained it with us today, and also in the book. I can't believe the hour's already passed, but we're at the end of the show, folks. It's been very fascinating. Like I said, get hold of this book. It's called Dark Matters. I love the play on words. Dark Matters. It's important. It's just wonderful. And thank you so much, Laurie, for being such a compelling presence on our show today, for bringing your wisdom.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm just really pleased to be part of this.
Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Laurie. Next week, author Jim Larson joins me, and he's going to discuss his book, A Fool's Path to Enlightenment. Sounds like serious fun, doesn't it? A Fool's Path to Enlightenment. So join us then. Once again, thanks to Laurie, and thanks for listening, folks. Tune in next week for further installments of World Spirituality. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on unityonlineradio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Truly understand the laws of the universe and live a life based on these profound and unwavering truths, then your dream life starts today. No more waiting, no more wandering. If you're ready to let go of the striving and move into the allowing, you're ready for Everyday Attraction on Unity Online Radio. We study the teaching of Abraham given to us by beautiful Esther Hicks, so we can release confusion for clarity, exchange struggle for serenity, and have the time of our lives today. Join host Ray Zander every Friday at noon Central Time, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Unity Online Radio for Everyday Attraction, where the law of attraction gets real.
When your world goes topsy-turvy and turmoil threatens, try this exercise. Think about tranquility. Let the screen of your mind reflect whatever the word tranquility may bring. Perhaps you'll see a majestic snow-covered mountain peak, perhaps a clear still lake or a sparkling stream. Enjoy whatever image comes. It's your thought. Now let yourself find the place of complete stillness deep within you. Here you are poised, serene, and peaceful. The poet T.S. Eliot wrote, "At the still point, there the dance is." The dance of life continually shifts its rhythm and form in its attempt to carry you beyond limited ideas of who you are. Enter into the still point of your being. There, Regardless of what may surround you, you will find peace. This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.